My name's Liana Berry, and you're listening to Art Muse Podcast, a podcast about the intersections between art, healing, and creativity. This episode's subject is going to be on artivism, and I'm usually pretty excited to record my episodes, but today I am especially so. This is one of my favourite topics. I'm really looking forward to chatting about it with you. So artivism is exactly as it sounds. It's one of those words that's just smooshed together from two different words, and it's just that combination of art and activism. So using creative and artistic methods and expression to create awareness, to motivate change, and it can be used to create community, it can be used to make political, environmental, social statements. There's lots of different ways that artivism is used, and I am going to be running through them a little bit later in the podcast, and I really want to challenge you to stick around if you're already feeling a little bit turned off by this subject. What can sometimes happen with words like activism is that there's a lot of association with the word itself, and so some people experience the word activism as something that's really loud and disruptive, full of risk. And it can be a little bit alienating, that word. And what I want to chat about today is that artivism can be quite loud, it can be disruptive, but actually a lot of the time it can be really quiet and it can be humble, and there are lots of little ways to use creativity and art to make micro changes and spread, you know, random acts of kindness through creativity, as well as those larger, bigger statements. So if you're an introvert and you're just thinking, oh, like, I don't know if this is really relevant to me, I'm not someone that feels resourced or driven to go and make a lot of noise about the topics I care about, keep listening. I hope this will inspire you to see the different ways that creativity can be used. And ultimately, what I hope from today is that word exactly is that this subject helps you understand ways that art can generate hope. It's one of the biggest complaints, I think, from a lot of people that are anxious or are, you know, sensitive or are in really difficult places, is that it's so easy to lose that sense of hope, that sense that something can change for the better in the future. And creativity does have a lot of potential to help us generate that and generate a sense of participation and generate entry points, I guess, to participate and to participate in positive change in a way that doesn't have to be loud and abrasive. It can be quiet and considered and intentional and beautiful. So if we're thinking about what hope is to cherish a desire with anticipation, to want something to happen or to be true. And I just think quite often we have hope that things will be different, our suffering will ease, we will fulfill something, have something we long for fulfilled. And, you know, hope can be definitely like a personal and individual journey. And it can also be really collective. So, you know, hope for peace, for example, is very much a collective desire. And there is also a collective narrative and media that plays quite a precarious role in a sense of hope in society, and at times it can really be anguished. And something I have slowly learnt when feeling overwhelmed, anxious, depleted, and hopeless is to narrow my gaze. And I think this can sometimes sound a little bit insensitive or a little bit self-orientated, I don't know. It's something that I want to open the conversation about, because I think there very much is this tension at the moment in a globalized world around being able to participate in those globalized conversations. And I think it's, as always with me, my opinion is very much it's like an and conversation, not an or conversation. But that global versus local thing is really important to discuss, because I think what we do locally and how we treat activism and hope on a local level becomes really important, a really important foundation for that global level. So if we become fixated and focused on the global needs, or the, I guess when I say global, I just mean like issues and difficulties that are geographically quite far away from ourselves, is that it's much quicker and easier to become hopeless because there are automatically all of these barriers to participation. One of the only exceptions there is financial support. So financial support is actually quite an active way to be able to support a cause. And it is actually a really, really helpful way to be able to actively participate in something you care about, because many charities and organizations depend on money to be able to resource themselves and to be able to facilitate putting skilled individuals on the front line where many of us aren't able or aren't willing to be. So I think financial support, when it can be given and provided and donated by people that have the means and the affluence to do so, can be really beneficial. But if you're not able to financially donate to causes, it can feel really stifling in regards to like what to do to help the things that you care about and to initiate and participate in positive change and to maintain that flame of hope. And so if we're focused on that globalized level where there are all of those automatic barriers of distance, geographical distance, cultural differences, a lack of accurate and flowing information, you know, emotions run high when there's pain involved, always. And so we're just kind of getting this feed of emotions and feelings a lot of the time that there's very little we can do. So I just think it's great to have a broad conversation, to think about like the local and global relationships, to certainly have those conversations about what we can do and what our responsibilities are globally to support each other. Globalization has definitely different faces. It's definitely got a dark side. One of the benefits is that it really promotes this idea that we are all humans and that we all share our humanity. And we are able to support each other, we're able to learn from each other. The dark side of globalization has a lot to do with consumerism and excess, and I guess the drive for power and control. And there's a complexity, an additional complexity that is birthed from globalization. So yeah, they're two sort of like, I guess, streams of conversation to have. And I'm not going to go a lot into globalized activism today. I do think it's a really important topic, and I do think there are things that we can be doing to support global causes that we're passionate about and that need support. Particularly, you know, like I said, easy way to do that is to be able to, if you're able to donate financially to reputable charities that are doing frontline work. And I think art making does also absolutely have a role within all sorts of activism spaces. It is certainly a way to communicate and to share stories and to express what is happening in situations. And it is also a way to be able to apply mental health aid, you know, using art and art activities post-disaster or, you know, post-war and conflict. Art very, very much, art therapy very much has a place. But today's episode, I really just want to have a discussion about artivism on a more localized level. And part of that is in preparation for next week's episode, where I am talking to incredible artist Jolie Russell. And so I think it's, you know, I've got an hour with you guys most weeks. It's not enough time to be able to cover sometimes these big topics. And sometimes I wonder about myself being audacious enough to even bring part of these topics into my conversations, because I think, you know, part of that globalization thing is that there are lots of different people with dispositions, different perspectives, different cultural backgrounds, different experiences in the world, all having language on the same platform, whether that's social media, whether that's general media, whatever medium they're using, there is a globalized platform. Even though I'm on a much more micro level and I have a much smaller community attached to Art Muse podcast, there are some of you listening from all over the world, and some of you are going to be impacted by ecological disasters, warfare, conflicts, all sorts of things that I am not privy to and I don't want to be insensitive to. And so a part of me worries, I guess, when I have these conversations, because I want to be aware and careful of not diminishing the need for change for some people, not smoothing over people's painful experiences and not quietening the need for voices. But I guess what I'm speaking to is this sense of overwhelm that a lot of us have when we hear all of the voices at the same time. Like, how do you orientate yourself to be able to feel hope, to be able to instigate any change, to be able to use your art in a way that not only soothes and supports yourself, but also potentially is a vehicle for action and for positive impact? You know, if all those voices are active at the same time, how do you navigate that? And what I'm basically trying to say is that one of the essential ways to do that is to narrow your gaze and to either be selective and focus on one point of focus, like one subject matter that is important to you, or to narrow your gaze to what's in front of you. And this is where I love this concept of the butterfly effect. So I know that there's a movie with that name. I don't really watch movies, so I'm not really privy to the ins and outs of it. I know that it was quite popular. It's been around a long time now. But the concept of the butterfly effect is this idea that the world is deeply interconnected and that there is so much complexity within the systems of the world that one tiny thing can have a influence on a larger scale as it kind of works its way through that chain of reaction. So my understanding is that the initial belief that a butterfly flapping its wings can create a typhoon. So it's this idea that something tiny can eventually lead to something big. And I feel reinvigorated and empowered by that idea, is that the small things that we do and the way that we live intentionally on a localized level can in turn create bigger change. So I think that is really a good antidote for that feeling of helplessness and hopelessness, is actually narrowing that gaze and going back to a local level. Okay, what can I do for me right now, for my family around me, for my local community, for a stranger that I can interact with physically in a day-to-day way? How can that start that butterfly effect? And so I will be talking about ways that art can do that and giving you lots of ideas to kickstart with. One of my favorite quotes as well I wanted to mention before I go into that, it's a quote by Fred Rogers, and it says, "When I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, 'Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping.'" And I think that is also really important to remember, is that while sometimes it can feel like there's no progress, that, you know, that evil is victorious, that the loss is too significant to be able to even digest, is that there are so many people in the world that have kind and good hearts that are helping. And so when you feel alone, have a look around and see what others are doing and look for those helpers. And I find that artists and artwork is a great way to find that visibility. And I think this quote also just reminds you that helping is a way to restore hope. So helping in a way that doesn't overwhelm you or conflict with your values, because that can quickly lead to burnout. But just finding a way that is sustainable, and, you know, a perfect way to do this is, of course, art making. Without any further ramblings, because I think I could probably just go on forever about activism and artivism and hope. But I guess the takeaways are that I don't want you to feel alone if you do feel hopeless. I want you to know that there's always options for moving that and shifting that feeling. And I want to inspire you that art is an incredible way to do that, and to do that in a way that doesn't have to be abrasive and loud and disruptive and depleting. Saying that activism is always that way, but depending on who you are and how you are, it can feel that way for some people. Some people thrive off it, and I'm so grateful. I think whenever we sort of get into this space when we're talking about activism and about fighting for justice and change and peace and restoration, I think you realize like the diversity of humanity, and I become so grateful for those variations, and that so many people are able to stand on the front lines and do the incredibly difficult and traumatic work And I just think feeling guilty or feeling stuck is probably the biggest frustration, because, you know, it's not helpful. You know, if you have limitations, it's not helpful to blame yourself. It is helpful to look at what are the different little things that I can do each day to continue putting positive energy into the world, to support other people. And let's dive into some of the ways that we can do that. So I think I will break it down into three topics. We've got community artivism, we've got kindness artivism, and we've got eco artivism. I'm going to run through eco reasonably quickly because I have touched on it in interconnection episode, and I will be chatting to an eco artivist next week, so there'll be a bit more diving into that topic. But I guess the different ways that you can use art making to support environmental activism is you can use it to create visual reminders for people, and that can either be in the way of creating calls to action, or it can be in a way of just showing people value. It's a fairly common agreement that what we love, we will protect. So I guess in that way, we can think about any artwork that's made that champions and highlights and values the natural world as a form of eco-artivism, because you are showing and sharing the beauty and the incredibility of the natural world. And I know that some people target this even more. So for example, they will do paintings of endangered animals or obscure, interesting, fascinating creatures and animals that people aren't normally aware of. There's an incredible photographer who was featured recently on Gardening Australia, which is a national gardening show in Australia. They featured an incredible photographer called Layla Jeffries, and she creates supersized portraits of birds that show off their beauty and their personality. And so looking at her work, you just become besotted with birds. Her work is absolutely incredible. I will link it in the show notes. And she creates really large photographic works for her exhibitions. But all of a sudden, looking at her work, you're exposed to all of these details about birds, the different types, their different personalities, their physical beauty. And, you know, included within her photographs are, you know, some birds that are under threat. So all of a sudden, you know, you're engaging with an art medium and a creative medium, you're consuming art, but it's a way of education. It's a visual education, and it has an emotional impact on you in a way that isn't overwhelming or jarring or, you know, difficult to digest. And there is a place for that as well. I'm not saying you can't create artworks and it's not valuable to create artworks that are emotionally provocative in a way that can be unsettling. Sometimes there is an importance for that. I do think it's undervalued, the importance of creating beautiful works as a way to ignite activism. I, a long time ago, volunteered for World Vision, and that was when child sponsorship, so donating money to the charity monthly and being matched up with a child to be able to receive updates about where that money was going to support them and their family. And the children would send you cards or photographs or drawings and, you know, information about their day-to-day life. And it created this really positive connection and this personalized connection with the amazing work that the charity was doing and where that money was going. And one of the things I remember sort of coming across when I was doing that volunteer work was that actually creating that positivity was really essential for the success of charity-driven change. So they found that people would donate more to charity, and this wasn't specific to World Vision, this was just generalized information that I had come across, and I have no idea where the resource for that is. But it was this idea that if people feel positive about donation, they're more likely to have a longer relationship with that charity, and they're more likely to give more. And, you know, within their means still, you know, it's always promoted that people don't overextend themselves, but people are more likely to give when there's a positive connection there. And so I guess guilting people in and distressing people into giving money, people will still often give, but that connection can sometimes die out much faster. And we all want to say it shouldn't, it shouldn't, it shouldn't. But at the end of the day, that's just how humans are wired, and that's how humans are connected. And we have all of these coping mechanisms to deal with difficult emotions. And some of those are healthy and some of those are maladaptive. For a lot of us, they can be maladaptive. So they can be things like avoiding or ignoring or running away from, you know. So if we're thinking about that in different environments, it means that often those connections drop off or are severed, because if the only information that's coming through is like desperately difficult, it's not sustaining. So I think that was part of the success of programs like Sponsoring a Child, was that it was personalized, but it was also positive. You were able to actively see positive change. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that sometimes creating positive, you know, what could be termed positive artwork that displays the beauty and the intricacy and educates people on the diversity of nature can be a powerful form of artivism, eco-artivism. And this can come in the format of like paintings or photography or sculptures that are nature-inspired, you know, whatever medium you work in. Or it can be a little bit more explicit. So you see this a lot with children that are engaging with artivism through their schools. I know that I've spotted quite a bit around WA before, either posters that have been printed and enlarged to go on the side of bins. I've also seen it on ceramic tiles inserted into footpaths, and they're given the project to create a message that they would like to tell people about treating the environment. So the ones I have seen have been around not littering, picking up 3 pieces of rubbish, which is part of Take 3 for the Sea initiative. And yeah, so you can create a poster. You could create a poster for your local workplace. You could create a poster for your home. Perhaps just has different, a singular or different ways to be more environmentally friendly. You might create a poster around what is able to be recycled and not recycled, because obviously recycled contamination is a big problem here. You might give people other ideas or have a message that's important to you. You might have a fundraising campaign. You might be raising money for an environmental charity or cause, and you might create a art-based poster to share with other people and to ask for donations. And I think it's a lovely way of personalizing it and to add creativity into the mix and have a creative visual to support that. So that's another way, is to create posters. Another way to do artivism for eco causes is obviously to participate in, well, I don't know what other parts of the world call it, but there's an interchangeable language here of saying marches or protests. And I guess, you know, again, that can create some hesitancy from people who are sensitive to some of those more disruptive environments. But over the years that I have been involved in protests, for want of a better word, they have often been really peaceful and very creative. So there is a picture of me somewhere painted as a clownfish. And I created a really huge banner of a whale at James Price Point. That was when I was volunteering with the Wilderness Society, and they had a big campaign for James Price Point in northern Western Australia. So you can, if you want to be creative, you want to be in a collective environment, you've got a bit of energy to get out there, that is another way to bring your creativity to your artivism, is to create big posters or costumes that you can wear to some of these collective gatherings, marches, protests, whatever you'd like to call it. And often those are the ones that will stand out. I know that if I have seen people walking past within a city, there used to often be marches within Perth City for people raising awareness about different causes. And some of them I had very little understanding of or knowledge or awareness of. And often the people that I would watch most closely were the ones that were creative, the ones that had a really different homemade costume or that had a really creative banner. And I know we have all seen photographs as well through social media of people having really witty statements and really colourful banners. So that is another way to engage your artivism. And the last mention for eco-artivism, to use environmentally friendly art materials. And I have a blog on this, and I referenced it in earlier in the episode about interconnection. And we had lovely guest Luca Jane Simmons on, who is a slow fashion designer. Yeah, she's an inspiration as far as using recycled, upcycled fabrics within fashion and just creating longevity in creations. And I would encourage you to go back and listen to those two episodes if you haven't listened to them. But that is definitely a way to be active and to make impact, is to be more mindful of the art materials that you use and where they're sourced from. And of course, the absolute golden standard of that is to be able to use recycled, repurposed art materials in your artwork. And whether that's just repurposing your own things, or whether that's getting really creative and using a waste product and transforming it into something new. And I will leave some of that discussion for next episode. Okay, so let's jump on to kindness as an opportunity for artivism. And this is like probably one of my favorite topics. Actually, they all are, because I am a big environmentalist as well. Okay, let's jump into kindness and random acts of kindness. So this is one of those micro opportunities to be able to use art making in a way that's tiny and small, but hopefully has a butterfly effect. So let's look at how ideas for random acts of kindness using art. I guess one of the big features is often that it's anonymous. It doesn't always have to be anonymous, but there is something really special about being able to find a little piece of artwork or a little painted stone or a felt heart or a quote out and about in the world that's tucked away that you have no idea who made it. And it just feels really special that someone has left that there and gifted that to the world in the hope that someone who needs it will find it and benefit from it when they find it. So obviously be wise about where you put these things, make sure it's not endangering anything or it's not damaging any habitat. But yeah, cityscapes, townships can be a great way to do this. I have left quotes before, inspiring or creative quotes for people to find, and I've left them on buses, at bus stops, on cafe tables, inside magazines, at doctor's surgeries. There's all of these different spaces that people inhabit all the time, and you can be particular. I have also put them on cars and car parks, at hospitals and different things, and there's just lots of ways that you can spread kindness just through these tiny little acts and just being considerate about where you place them. And it is such an exciting feeling and really, really rewarding. And I must admit, I would always place my little quote down. And it's, you know, the quotes that I was writing on these tiny little cards. And I would place it down like I was doing something illegal, you know, like I was so anxious, and I would just place it down and run away as fast as I could. Or, you know, look around on the bus to make sure no one was watching as I tucked it into the windowsill. And I just look back now and like giggle, because I just think, you know, Liana, like, you're just putting a quote somewhere, a nice quote there for someone to read. It's not endangering anyone, it's not polluting an ecosystem, it's a lovely thing to do. Like, there's no need to be so self-conscious. But I guess you feel a little bit exposed, which just goes to show how often I think we don't have time. We're running around and we don't have awareness of what we can do to spread those little acts of kindness. So get creative with it. You might knit something, you might draw something, you might write something, and yeah, you can place it around anywhere. The other thing that I have also done is written anonymous cards and put them in letterboxes. And so you can, I guess, if you're aware on your street that there's someone, an elderly person that lives alone, or, you know, someone that you think might be struggling, you can offer a letter of support. Another way that I have done it before is when I have been running my art studio in Inglewood, and I got the kids in one of my classes to create artworks, and then I dropped them off at an aged care facility. And so this is now is kind of going into the community genre that I wanted to talk about, but it is this idea that you're sort of donating artwork anonymously for other people to experience and to other people to experience connection through creativity. So there are like lots of different ways to do that. And there are a couple of companies, I will link them in the show notes. There is a big company that sets you up actually with PenPal that you can request to find someone that is artistically interested, and they may be someone that you can create drawings for or discuss artwork and creativity with. I think they're called the Letterbox Project in Australia, and their website is connectedau.com.au/letterboxproject. Yeah, so they are encouraging people to write to each other that are feeling disconnected and isolated. A lot of those people are elderly people or people in care homes, so it's a great initiative. Most countries should have some variation of this, and yeah, that's another lovely way to ignite some artivism and some random acts of kindness, although that one won't be anonymous. It is still an act of kindness. And there is also a project if you're into felting. There's a global kindness community that was started in Hobart in Tasmania, and it's called 1,000 Hearts, and you can get involved and you can make felt hearts, and then these felt hearts are distributed widely and they offer people a symbol of compassion and care, and the idea is that the felt heart can slip into a pocket. I will link them into the show notes as well, but you can just Google 1,000hearts.com.au. Yeah, a really lovely example of how art and creativity be used to spread connection and kindness. Yeah, they have a great website with stories. You know, you can buy kits and you can buy hearts. So Sarah, the creator, created 1,000 hearts, hand-stitched 1,000 pocket hearts to give away at no cost in random acts of kindness. And she would send packets of hearts as well to people that volunteered within their community so that they could disperse them and it could get further reach. So again, that butterfly effect, you can just see how one person's idea to use their craft and their creativity of creating felt hearts could suddenly become very widespread and create networks of connection and kindness. So it's really cool to be able to see, and there is no limit. These are just some ideas, you know, of painting pebbles or creating felt hearts or writing letters and making cards or putting pictures together. There's so many different ideas. Create collages, you know, the sky is really the limit. We spoke to Ellie Anderson, who's a crocheter, early in this first season, and she spoke about yarn bombing. So that is another artivism where you create crocheted or knitted shapes and objects and place them in community spaces to brighten them up. So there was a really big movement of this that commenced a number of years ago, and you would see lots of crocheted trees. Trees had these like crocheted, brightly coloured wrappings in these cities, and not only did it add an incredible pop of colour and interest and brighten all the commuters that were walking past day, but it also, I think, really highlighted what it was that it was displayed on. So it really kind of like spotlighted and drew attention to that thing. So if it was covering like a phone box, or if it was covering a tree, suddenly you'd become aware of that phone box or that tree. It's a really powerful way to draw attention to something, is using art forms and creative forms. And so you can see there that it's actually quite passive. Like, obviously you've got to have the courage to go and install it, but the creation of it can be low-key. It's risk-free. You can be within your comfort zone, you can work towards your strengths and your skills, and you're just sharing that with the world. But all of a sudden, you know, you would see the trees lining the street a different way, and you'd value them and appreciate them. And, you know, it would be a bit of humour because you think, oh, it's getting a warm blanket for the winter, and the tree's getting a warm blanket. But it's also, yeah, highlighting what makes up our community landscapes. And so that's another way of doing it, is engaging with like yarn and yarn bombing. And lastly, I kind of, before I wrap up, want to run into like, I guess, more of a community space. So using artivism in a community. So you've got auctions and fundraisers. When there was big bushfires in Australia in 2020, there were a number of people that were selling artworks and donating their money. And it inspired me to make a small koala drawing and paper painting that I just said whoever bids the highest price can purchase it. And then that money will get donated to a wildlife charity that was recovering and supporting koalas that had been burnt or displaced due to the fires. And a lovely friend of mine bought it for $50. And so it's not extortionate amounts of money, but that $50 was able to be donated to a charity. And there were people organizing much bigger auctions and fundraisers through art making. So it was like this, I guess, incredibly motivating exchange, because if we think of money as an exchange, people were happy to exchange a reasonable amount of money they knew was going to go to a charity, and the artist was happy to donate their artwork. So the donator was both people kind of together. But, you know, an artwork by itself given to a charity isn't going to do much. It will make their office, you know, really warm and friendly and be lovely in that sense, but it's passive in its solo state. Apart from the visual message that it's got, it's still kind of like passive as far as like being able to contribute to resources. But if it's exchanged for money, it exchanges into this active form all of a sudden, where it's like the money is the resource that was going to be helpful for the charities that were trying to buy more equipment, that were, you know, had huge electricity bills from staffing their facilities around the clock, you know, buying food for the volunteers just so that they could work long hours. There was all of these different things going on, paying for vets, there was fuel for the vehicles, all of these hidden costs that come in. And so money is this really important resource in some of those situations. So artists realizing that they could donate painting or an artwork of some kind, or, you know, an illustration, or, you know, any type of even 3D artwork to someone that had the money. So it was like an exchange, a three-way exchange between the charity and the two donators. And it was really cool. And I just think that is often happening all over the world with different people. And you can participate with other people doing it, or you can just do it solo. You can just put it out to your family, your friends, your community. If you're an artist, you obviously have a bigger community to work with. But if you're not, if you're just a home creator, you can still do it. See if any of your friends or family would be happy to purchase an artwork and you want to donate the money to a charity you love. These are just ideas if you feel motivated to do something and you're not sure how or what. It's an option. It's something to consider. You can play around with how it works for you. So I think that's a nice way to consider how artivism can work in the context of auctions or fundraisers. And yeah, I've seen a lot of them over the years. I also have a huge framed photograph that I bought as part of an auction for an environmental campaign. So I can't remember now, it was probably approaching 12 or 14 years ago, but I think the artist did get a certain portion of that money to cover the costs of printing and a certain commission, I guess, but then a large amount of the sale also went to the dedicated charity. So there's lots of different variations that you can research if you're interested in doing that. There's also, I guess, if we're thinking about community, there's different drives for creating, for if you are into fabrics and knitting and some of those crafts that can be practically translated. So there are often groups of people that are knitting beanies and baby wear for premature infants, where it's really difficult to buy clothing sizes that fit, or they want to alleviate for families having to go out and source that, and to be able to have something handmade for those tiny little babies that are born prematurely. So there are a number of groups that do that. There's a few other ways to engage with creating practical, creative items for people. I have seen an article a long time ago about women knitting blankets for elephants that were in a sanctuary, which was really cool. They were really, really bright coat type blankets for the elephants that were feeling the cold in a particularly cold season. And I have seen similar things for humans, people having blanket drives and creating homemade blankets and beanies and scarves for people that are homeless or, you know, in need. And it just makes such a big difference sometimes having something that's homemade and created and, yeah, sent with love. So you can have a look for any of those in your community. If you're unsure, you can start one. I've seen people before making teddy bears and dolls for children in orphanages. There's just endless amounts of options. It is really just about doing research in your locality and seeing if there's something local, or if there is anything you can source even a bit further away to engage with. And if there's not, see if you can have the courage to start your own. And it doesn't have to be huge. It can just be one person that you impact. You could just create, you know, or donate some of your prints or some of your cards to a group of people, or or a nursing home or a charity, or, you know, yeah, really there is no limitation in artivism. And you will find if you engage with some of these practices that not only will you be putting goodness out into the world, that you will also be restoring your sense of hope and your sense of empowerment. And I just think, yeah, it's really exciting. It's a really lovely way to be positive in the world. And I am going to wrap up the episode there. I'd love to hear from you if you have any other ideas of how to use artivism and activism. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope it's inspired you. I will also be posting a post on Instagram so you can jump on there and comment. Thank you so much for listening to Art Muse Podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, then please like, share, or follow on whichever listening app you use. If you want to keep up to date on social media, the best place to find us is on Instagram at artmuse_podcast.